It's time for Taking Care of Business on Midlands 103. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Midlands 103.
Good evening, you're very welcome to Taking Care of Business here on Midlands 103. Coming up between now and 8pm, the Midland Fertility Clinic is a female-led fertility clinic established to deliver personalised, high-quality fertility care and treatment for men and women. You'll meet the two sisters behind the clinic. It's a very new business, but it is growing fastly and they are absolute experts in their field. Also, leading by example, Kilsarran has proudly announced the launch of two new electric concrete trucks as part of their commitment to sustainable and eco-friendly transport solutions. It is definitely an industry first, something I thought we wouldn't see for quite a while yet, but there's two on the roads in Dublin. So how soon will it be before we see them travelling around the Midlands as well? Well, Ken Mulcairn's Group Head of Innovation and Sustainability at Kilsarran will have all the details on that exciting industry first. And then a bit later, tourism activators Mary Hensey from Offaly and Regina Dunn from Leash are hosting a joint public information evening on April 24th in the Heritage Hotel in Killinard. Mary will be here a bit later in the show with all the details you need to know. If you have a tourism or hospitality business, keep an ear out for that. It is definitely a function or an event that you need to get yourself along to. If you want to join the conversation on this evening's show, as always, the quickest and easiest way to get me here in the studio is by text and WhatsApp on 083 3010 103. If you want, you can try drop me an email at business@midlands103.com. May not see it straight away, but certainly if there's something you want me to come back to you on, please do so. But before that, you might have seen it in the news, kind of broke this evening, and it was officially confirmed what many people had suspected. Indeed, the new Minister for Enterprise, Longford Westmeath TD Peter Burke, kind of said it last week that the proposed referendum on the patent, which was scheduled for the 7th of June, it was going to be part of the voting for the local and European elections. He hinted last week that the government were strongly considering postponing it. It doesn't take a genius to guess why, if you look at what happened all those weeks ago with the previous two referendums and the results that caught the government by surprise, certainly all the main parties, even many of the opposition parties too. And when it comes to something like a referendum around patents and intellectual properties, most of you are probably going, what is it? What are you actually talking about? And why do we need a referendum on that? Well, thankfully, I have an expert in that field in studio with me this evening. And we spoke about this topic about a year ago because it has been on our agenda, I believe, for almost 11 years. Ireland is lagging behind pretty much every other country in the EU in terms of signing up to a unified patent court. So why are we so far behind? Why do we need to change the constitution on this? And what's it all about in the first instance? I guess, what are the implications likely to be for businesses and research performing organisations and new Irish startups? Well, Marie Walsh is from HGF. They're based up in Dublin and she's a registered Irish patent attorney, a European patent attorney and a chartered UK patent attorney with over 25 years experience in advising clients, including startups and SMEs to the very large corporations as well. She's worked across a number of technology areas and specialises in industrial chemistry, material science, polymer chemistry and pharmaceutical chemistry. Very good evening, Marie. Welcome to Taking Care of Business again.
Hello, Ronan. Great to be back. Thank you very much.
When we first spoke about coming back on, we were thinking, you know, this would start an awareness campaign, get the word out there for what people would be asked to vote on the 7th of June. And as we know this evening, that's not going to happen. Your reaction to that?
Right, exactly. Well, this has taken us all by surprise. As you mentioned, it's probably not a topic that even had been in the papers on so much until it actually ended up being cancelled. So it's officially just today that they've announced, as you said, Minister Burke has effectively made it clear that it's certainly not going to happen on the 7th of June. And on the reaction front, in many ways, reading Minister Burke's comments, it actually comes across as being a measured approach. But as you mentioned, we hope that this will be more of a purposeful preparation and use of whatever amount of time remains for that purposeful preparation.
Is the timing a concern? Because, right, it certainly was a referendum that wasn't going to grab the public attention, but We're into the last maybe 9-10 months of this government. Is it even going to feature on a programme of government for whoever comes in next, or does it have to?
Well, in my opinion, it absolutely has to, because we're already, as you mentioned there in the introduction, we're already 10 years since this was actually signed off as an agreement. Now, that's not to say, of course, the rest of Europe equally had some political issues along the way. But effectively, since the 1st of June last year, 17 EU countries have got this new system in place. So we certainly are outside that cover in terms of EU patent protection for certainly the 17 unitary or 17 countries that are in this unitary system. Now, that's not to say, of course, just to be clear, Irish companies can still access this unitary system. But if you want to put it in the frame of a conversation I had with a client last week where I had to explain, yes, there is a unitary system, but actually Ireland isn't in it. You need to do a parallel procedure, which costs money. And even, as you know, for SMEs and people that are involved in startups, the amount of time to even wrestle with some of this stuff. Whereas for a French or German SME, I could have a similar conversation and say, just tick the box, get your unitary patent, you're in. And it's so much simpler and less costly for
beyond
particularly Irish companies.
Cost-saving aspect of that, what are the other benefits of Ireland being part of that unified patent court?
Well, from my perspective, the way I would see it is that there's never been an EU system that hasn't been of benefit for Ireland to be part of it. From the perspective of foreign direct investment and simplicity of even setting up a company and investing in a space such as Europe, well, plainly, I don't think it takes too much to imagination to figure out that it's not good for Ireland to be outside of that canopy coverage.
Yeah, I know in that article that I saw on RT News there this evening, it says a constitutional referendum is needed to enable the transfer of jurisdictional powers from the Irish courts to the new international court. So, yes, you can understand why we need a referendum to bring this about. But really, this shouldn't even fall. It shouldn't even be debated on kind of political division lines. This is just something that, right, yes, we have to change the constitution, but the benefits are there for pretty anybody in business. Do you think can there be a different approach taken for this? Like, there should be no reason why a date can't be set, irrespective of who's in government. And you said that awareness campaign starts now. And again, as you said, something that Peter Burke has alluded to today.
Well, that's exactly it, Ronan, that this really should be one that is seen as being something that Irish businesses need, that is needed for Ireland, that's needed for clarity and certainty. We've already waited several years, and in particular since the 1st of June. In fact, even in the summer prior to that, the government at the time committed that the referendum would be held by May 2024. And then it was conveniently tagged on to the local and European elections, of course, which was a convenient date, piggybacking on the June 7th polling day. But maybe, as Minister Burke says today, this is one that needs to stand alone as a referendum, and one that the conversation is focused on. What does Irish business need for clarity, certainty, and soon?
Yeah, and it doesn't sound like it's going to be an easy task, but I suppose the message is going to be the key the detail on that, how we get that message out to people, how you convince the general public that, number one, this matters, and how it may not directly affect their lives in any way they know, but trying to get that word out there is going to be huge. There's surely lots of groups, you know, lobbying groups or very, you know, business industry representative groups too, that are probably lobbying government at this. I wonder how they're feeling this evening now that they know officially that it's going to be postponed.
Well, as you say, I don't speak for them, of course. I'm here in my own capacity. But to pick up on your point, there certainly are the likes of the IBEC group. I must mention, of course, as well, that I am vice chair of the Association of Patent and Trademark Attorneys, UPC committee group. I'm not speaking in that capacity this evening, but there has been a lot of work done. And you mentioned there, look, is this one that impacts people's lives? You know, people have an idea that maybe patents are only for big corporations. Not so at all. Even to the likes of the pillow that you might be sleeping on in either your own home or in a hospital has potentially patentable type of technology in it these days in terms of antimicrobial filtering and that. So it's not a case of, you know, you go into Tesco and you think there's nothing patentable on the shelves. Not so. All of this is very much an impact for the population that, in fact, I think it's about half of the Irish economy is employed by SMEs in Ireland. So it's a significant conversation.
It's a huge, it's important to protect that as well. You mentioned that there's cost implications. It seems to be the buzzword at everything these days, but unfortunately cost implications from not being part of the Unified Patent Court. Does it also, I guess, take away some competitive advantage too? Does it prolong the process? Because if somebody has to go and get patents in other jurisdictions, as well as cost, is it really extending the time it's taking and therefore maybe allowing for or opening that door for maybe competitors to copy a product or a certain design or a prototype?
To be fair, I think it's more an element of the huge complexity of decision making around it rather than a differential on the timeline, because effectively the application process is the same. It's just that you have to go off then on a separate prong and get a parallel Irish patent as distinct from being able to be under the one big canopy coverage of the big umbrella of the EU unitary patent system. There is in alongside that the court system as well. Now that could have serious implications for Irish companies that could either want to stop someone copying or indeed find themselves on the receiving end of an action, because at the moment we can't have a local Irish division, whereas France, Germany and other countries have a local division. And at the moment an Irish company would actually have to end up in a German patent court because we don't have a local division here since we're not in the entire system.
Minister Peter Burke is from Mullingar in County Westmeath. If he's listening this evening, what needs to happen next? How do we get this up on people's agendas, particularly at the political level, and make sure that, number one, a date is given and that this awareness campaign starts?
Well, absolutely. That's precisely what we would be calling for, that there's a heightened awareness around the relevance of this for Irish businesses, and that it's not just pushed on down the road as something that has no relevance. Not at all. It's much more now something that clear information needs to be put out there. There are plenty of people that are willing to engage in it to provide that information. So in terms of the next steps, I think from the minister's statement today, he's setting out a very positive framework, and he comments at the end of his statement about engaging with groups and sharing that information and making it available. I think that's the immediate call to action right now.
I think in fairness to him, he was on with Will Faulkner during the week after his appointment as Minister for Enterprise, and he mentioned how he is a chartered accountant and he has spent many years working with SMEs and small businesses. He knows the language of business. If anybody will know what this is about and how important it is, Peter Burke will know. But Marie, thank you so much for coming down this evening as well. Undoubtedly a topic we will be coming back to again and again, trying to raise awareness of it and gain support of it. But for now, Marie Walsh, partner and patent attorney at HGF in Dublin, thank you for that this evening.
Thanks very much, Ronan.
Time now for a very short break. After that, meet the family duo behind the Midlands Fertility Clinic.
Taking care of business, with thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Still to come on this week's episode of Taking Care of Business, find out why Kilsarn has invested in two brand new state-of-the-art fully electric concrete trucks. It's part of their commitment to sustainability and eco-friendliness. A major change and a major turnaround in the construction industry. It's a national first. Ken Mulcairn's Group Head of Innovation and Sustainability will tell us all about that in about 10 or 15 minutes time. And then later on, Mary Henze from Offaly County Council will be in. Mary is the EU Just Transition Fund Tourism Activator for the region. And along with Regina Dunn from Leash, they're hosting a joint public information evening at the end of April in Killinard, in the Heritage in Killinard. And Mary will have all the details you need towards the end of this evening's show. But moving on from our discussion around patents and the Unified Patent Court, I'm going to meet now the two founders. They're sisters behind a very new business in the Midlands. It's only opened just over a year, but both sisters bring a huge amount of experience into the sector. And that is, the business is the Midlands Fertility Clinic, established by Liz Marie, who is the clinical manager, and by Laboratory Director Geraldine Emerson. Liz is with me in studio now, and Geraldine is dining us by the marvels of Zoom. Liz, very good evening.
Thanks, Ronan, for having us.
Liz, a very new business, I've said, but you both have vast experience in the sector as well. What was it? Why fertility, I suppose, initially as a career and then to consider doing it as a business in the Midlands?
Yeah, I suppose I'm coming from a business management and healthcare management point of view, and Geraldine brings the clinical aspect to it. We were born and bred in Port Arlington, so we've seen people travel for all sorts of care, and we wanted to bring these expertise back down to Laois and down to the Midlands so people could access them easily.
And when it came to setting up the business then, was what were you looking for first? Was it establishing a presence, you know, even in terms of, you know, recruiting staff and getting the awareness of your service out there? How did you begin that process?
So we started off with a location because we had to have planning for healthcare setting. And with that then came the fit out, and then came the branding, and then came the, I suppose, the services we provided and what type of staff we needed then to fill those positions. So we would have a consultant who, an extremely, I suppose, experienced obstetrician and gynaecologist with fertility experience. We've an andrologist for semen analysis and a nursing team then as well. And Geraldine oversees then the laboratory.
Because I know there's actually, and maybe again it's probably an aspect of it that sometimes we overlook, but actually it's a service for both women and men, that are men maybe sometimes left out of that conversation or not considered when it comes to fertility. I know they're obviously a key part of it, but we don't hear it being targeted at men as such.
No, I suppose it, from my experience of working in the clinic for the last 12 months, most of the time it's the woman who will make that first call or send that first email. And I suppose it's the male then will actually, I suppose, follow in tow then. And like it is a team effort, of course, when you have a couple. But it just takes a bit of time of getting used to, because what we want to do is provide that first step. So we're sandwiched in between a bigger IVF unit and a GP practice. So we want to make that first step for a couple to be, I suppose, much easier on them to seek those investigations, the basic investigations, and to determine what course and what plan that they're actually go on then after that. Because some people, I suppose, some couples, depending on what that investigation, that what those results show, is the course that they take. And some of them, some people have to go straight for IVF. And that's when that will happen straight away. Others will be able to, you know, work on a plan with timed sexual intercourse or follicle tracking with some medication, and that works as well. So you do that for a period of time, and then it may be a case where you'll have to move on to more invasive treatments.
Yeah, it sounds, again, a very complex but very private process, very personal for people too. I suppose it nearly goes without saying, I'd imagine when you went looking at, you know, the typical market size or that gap in the market, there's so much more awareness about fertility needs and fertility treatment now. Did you find that almost it was a no-brainer to try and establish the clinic? Or in that research, did you notice that and they said, no, actually, we're going to slightly tailor how we do our service or deliver that? What was that like for you?
Well, I suppose Geraldine will talk. I suppose she's worked in the industry since its inception nearly in Ireland, as in she's doing it for the last 35 plus years. So I let her talk about what she's seen over the course of that time and why we brought it down to Laois.
Fantastic. And Geraldine Emerson joins us now. Very good evening, Geraldine. As Liz has said, you've vast experience in this sector as well. When it came to actually establishing the business then, and what was it for yourself really that convinced you, yes, this is the thing to do and to do so in the Midlands?
Hi, Ronan. Yes, absolutely. I suppose Lizzie is coming from the business aspect and absolutely right to do so. I suppose on my part, it's always been an emotional connection. I basically grew up or matured in IVF. I started at 18 years old, went to London and learned the trade there. So I've been well aware of the situation for many, many years in fertility and the importance of education. So for me, it was always going to be the ultimate thing was to set up in Ireland and bring back the technology that was advanced so much with the pioneers that I worked with, and they were pioneers. So when I started first in IVF, I mean, the first IVF baby was only 10 years old. the first frozen embryo baby was only 4 years old. So there's a lot of history with myself and the Pioneer. So things were moving fast back then. And it was a fantastic privilege to actually work in the industry at that time. So the gaps for me were always, always, and I think to this day still continue, is that when you get after the embryo transfer, you know, after the embryo transfer, tends to always be a lag time. You've had your transfer and left the unit, so everybody's just, you know, doing their own thing. More couples come through. The other area is when you get that negative test. So there's lots of gaps in there that I think IVF units, while they strive to fulfill those, they can't manage it because they're too busy. And so that's where the Midlands Fertility Clinic can come in, have a cup of tea, talk to us. We can also guide you through your whole experience in real time, because, like, you know, as Liz says, that I've been in the business, we know it, and I know exactly what happens in the labs.
When it comes to establishing a clinic such as Midlands Fertility Clinic, you know, and setting up the laboratories as well, what are we looking at? Can you give people an idea in terms of, you know, the technology, the hardware, what needs to go into creating a clinic like that, given, again, the level of service that you're offering people?
I mean, for fertility, you have to have the best. You've got to, there's no, because what we're trying to achieve is not just a live pregnancy or live birth. What we're trying to do is a healthy live birth. And that is the key performance indicator that should be plagued at all times for couples coming through. And in that respect is what we try to maintain at the Midlands Fertility Clinic. You know, we have, you know, in the level of treatment that we do in the first line treatment, we, you know, have our microscopes to the exact science they should be at. We have our laboratories at the quality service that they should be at, you know, in line with worldwide guidelines and best practices. So that's a technique. When you move into the IVF circle, there's a lot more. You have exactly got the EU tissue directive with the HPRA, which is, you know, what I was part of, and I was instrumental in. Actually, I led the lab of the becoming the first IVF tissue establishment in Ireland under the direction of the HPRA back in 2008 in Ireland. So, you know, dealing with those kind of requirements, as we know from the EU, are very strict and stringent. So the experience is always there. So it's what we strive to make sure, massive, ultimately, the healthy live birth.
Massive, massive advancements, massive change, I can only imagine, in those 30 years as well. And I'm sure that relearning, that those new techniques, new theories are continuously emerging as well. Is that something that you embrace? Is that an exciting part of your role, or is it just difficult to keep up with everything that's happening at this point?
Yeah, I suppose I'm in a very position at the moment of being kind of like group lab director of three laboratories at the moment in the Middle East as well, which we do over 400 egg collections a month. Bearing in mind, on average, there's 500 a year in Ireland per clinic. So I'm directing these laboratories who do 400 egg collections a month. So I see so much data, so much experience there, so much different techniques, and the introduction of AI techniques, which artificial intelligence, into the lab. So again, we can bring that back to the Midlands in Ireland. And with that, the experience to refer couples and guide them real time to the best labs. Because again, and this is another area I found a gap in, is that while my clinical colleagues, who I love and adore and respect, lots of times the lab are not brought into the policies or the procedures that should be, you know, because anything that happens outside the lab affects the lab. And so in that, Midlands Fertility Clinic can guide, be real time, go through it with the couples that we refer to the independently to clinics we know have good labs, because good labs make great babies.
And you mentioned that there, it was quite striking actually how you referred to, like, you know, live births being that ultimate goal, as that was that ultimate KPI it really is bringing that human part into it in such a clinical environment as well. Liz, that's obviously a key part of your branding and how you market Midlands Fertility Clinic.
Yeah, I suppose it's really important for us that our patients have the best support the whole way throughout their journey. So they might start with us in the Midlands Fertility Clinic, and we do the baseline workup, and maybe straight away or after a period of time we refer them on to an IVF unit, but we are still there for the whole length of their journey. So we also provide care such as scanning or bloods that they may need throughout the course of the plan that they're on. And we're there for them when they have to have a pregnancy test and please God, what you want is a viability scan, which is an early pregnancy scan. So we're there the whole way through up until then they go to their obstetrician. And it's really important because for a couple or anybody who is seeking fertility treatment, be it a single lady or a same-sex couple or a couple, you know, it's making that journey as easy as possible because it is a big step. It takes time to come to the decision to actually make that phone call or send that email. And people's relationships are stressed at times. You know, some women are doing it alone. It takes a lot of courage too. So it's trying to make it as comfortable and as supportive as possible for them.
Yeah, of course, we often look and think about the end. I was going to say the end product, that's a terrible thing to say, the end result, and there's undoubtedly highs and lows in it, but really a critical juncture for you is that first point of contact from a potential customer.
Yeah, exactly. And I suppose we're kind of we're one of a kind in Ireland, our clinic is, because we offer both male and female investigations, but we are also independent, an independent unit ourselves. So we really, it's at the, it's the patient's choice, and it's really important that it comes back to the patient's choice where they go after us. We will endeavour to support them on their choices, you know, and it's giving them as much information as we can each time that they have a question.
What are your plans for the business?
Well, it's to grow our business naturally. It's to bring as many services as we can, and that takes time. Rome wasn't built in a day, but you know, we want to bring it to the Midlands, bring as much, I suppose, add to our services as time goes by, and grow it and grow our staff, and maybe, you never know, locations or bring it to an actual laboratory, a larger laboratory and IVF unit. Then,
yeah, it really is. It's a fantastic case in point of taking a service that typically would be associated with Dublin or a big urban centre and taking it to Midlands, showing it can work because you've got greater access. You know, you can access the whole country. You're so central as well. And it's fantastic to see people doing that, taking those expertise, taking the plunge and doing what you've done. Liz Marie and Geraldine Emerson from Midlands Fertility Clinic, thank you so much for that this evening. Other conversations we can have within all this, and I think further conversations to be had across Midlands 103. Thank you for your great work. Thank you for coming in this evening, and look forward to hearing more about you.
Thanks, Ronan. Thanks very much.
Time now for a quick break, and we're going to go from talking about patents and fertility treatments to electric concrete trucks. There you go. Talk about variety.
Taking care of business. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Kilsarran, a leading name in the construction and building materials industry, has proudly announced the launch of two new fully electric concrete trucks. It's part of their commitment to sustainable and eco-friendly transport solutions. It has zero emissions and reduced noise pollution. They're two new Volvo FM trucks, and they are the first of their kind in Ireland. Now, I happen to have some experience in the past in concrete production and in that sector, and I know full well concrete trucks. Now, just to be sure, just to clarify, we often hear them referred to as cement trucks. They're not cement trucks. That's an entirely different truck that hauls bulk powder cement around the country. These are actual ready-mix concrete trucks, the ones with the spinning bottle that keeps the concrete moving as it's been transported and as it's been poured. So they are huge consumers of energy, traditionally diesel-based with a diesel engine to drive the bottle. So for the construction industry and a company like Kilsarran to even consider a fully electric truck is quite a large, large leap, but one that they have taken. To find out more about this, I'm delighted to be joined by Ken Mulkerns from Kilsarran, and Ken is over their sustainability there, and this is part of a wider sustainability policy within the group. Very good evening, Ken.
Good evening, how are you?
Ken, was that fair to say this is a major leap for somebody in the construction sector?
It is, yeah, it is fair to say. It's a huge leap, and it represents really a new era in the distribution of construction products in the country. The two trucks that we have, the Volvo FM fully electric trucks, are the first of their kind in Ireland and the UK. So very much uncharted territory, but one that we thought and a step that we thought we needed to take.
When did it first come onto your horizons that a company like Volvo were considering producing an electric truck and then to go and look at concrete? Again, as I say, one that traditionally people probably said there is no way we'll see electric concrete trucks in the next maybe 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, of course. So we began the journey a long time ago, actually, with Volvo. And as I said, trying to look into the feasibility of it, there's none of these trucks around that we could even look at data for. So very limited data and research data available. So what we did was we kind of collaborated with Volvo at an early stage, and we gave them 6 months of our own delivery data from our two inner city concrete plants. And they fed that into the simulator tool. And we mapped routes around the plants, around the Dublin city centre, and it kind of became apparent at that stage that it would be feasible.
And what were your initial kind of performance demands or KPIs? Because obviously they've got to transport a decent amount of weight. The trucks could get delayed on a site or get stuck in traffic, and they've got, say, ready-mix concrete in the back of them. What were your kind of list of demands, and I guess how did Volvo work at meeting all those for you?
Yeah, so each of the trucks, they're going to be based in our Ringsend plant, which where they'll be charged at night time once they're finished with deliveries, ready for the next day. So each of the trucks carries with 5 batteries each. So it has a power of over 550 kilowatts. So we were kind of very firm with Volvo from the outset that we needed these trucks to be able to do their deliveries through the day and then be charged at night time. Because if we had to charge them during the day, then obviously that would interrupt deliveries. And concrete, as you know, is a fresh product that we can't keep in the trucks for too long. So we kind of worked it out. And again, with that tool, Volvo committed to a circa 300 kilometre range per charge, depending on the weight to be carried. So we decided that these two trucks, which would represent 15% of our trucks in that depot, would be used for local deliveries and in the built-up areas.
And still, that's considerably impressive. Like a 300 kilometres per charge for a truck like that is good going. But this marks part of Kilsarn's overall sustainability policy. And you've seen fuel consumption reduced by 22% since 2017. And actually, the group is on a mission to reduce their overall Scope 1 and 2 emissions by 37% by 2030. Ambitious targets. How did you manage to actually bring about that decrease in fuel consumption?
Yeah, so with the fuel consumption, that's just one of the initiatives that we're working on. So I suppose from the get-go, we invested heavily in our fleet, and we upgraded all our fleet to the new Euro 6D trucks. So we don't have a truck on the road that's more than 6 years old. So they're very efficient to begin with. But then each of our drivers is actually sent on an eco driver training course as well. So he's taught about how to drive the truck efficiently to get the best use out of it. So between them kind of two initiatives and the training that we put in place, that's how we've seen the 22% decrease since 2017.
Yeah, it's impressive too. And then overall, looking at reducing Scope 1 and 2 emissions by 37% by 2030, what other actions are you taking as a group?
Yeah, so we have a huge number of initiatives there. So to give you some examples of what we're working on, so in terms of our Scope 1 and 2 emissions, that really comes in underneath our manufacturing and that type of thing. If I take our dry products division down in Kilcullen in County Kildare, which manufactures dry mortar, we need to dry a lot of sand to make that dry mortar. Traditionally, we would have used diesel burners to dry that. We invested heavily again and retrospectively refitted them plants with LPG burners, and that gave us a 45% reduction in CO2 emissions overnight. Again, when we talk about products and product initiatives, our paving side of the business, we would, any of our end of life or end of stock product, we will recrush into a usable aggregate and put about 12% back into our product, making it greener. And then if we talk about our road and our road networks around the country, which people will be familiar with, when we talk about asphalt, we're actively taking asphalt planings off the road. We're bringing them back to our plants, repurposing them and reprocessing them to what's called a recycled asphalt pavement. And we can use up to 15% recycled material in that new road. Up to 40% in of the material in the road. And that gives us a 15% reduction in CO2, but also gives us a 25% reduction in virgin aggregates that we would have to mine out of the ground.
Yeah, again, a huge change in a relatively short space of time. When it comes to looking at like other emissions, like to the scope threes, are you also beginning to look back, say, or look up and down your supply chains at your own suppliers and who you're purchasing off at further and factoring those numbers into those long-term targets?
Absolutely. So when we talk about our scope three emissions, the vast majority of them would be related to our cement and our cement supply. If you were to take a cubic meter of concrete, you know, or a square meter of paving, well over 90% of the CO2 embodied in there is related to cement. So as a company in 2022, we dedicated a new standalone department for research and innovation, which I head up. So each of our six business units has what we call an RI lead. And they work tirelessly with their team Monday to Friday purely on research innovation in the laboratories that we have across the country. And their sole task is to decarbonize what we have and to make sure that what we produce in the future and our new products and our new designs are lower embodied carbon also.
And I have a question in from a listener there who came in by text, just asking about the weight of the electric truck. That, you know, it's kind of well known that a lot of electric cars are considerably heavier than their diesel equivalent, given the batteries and stuff in them. From the point of view of the ready mix truck, what's the weight difference in that, and does that affect the quantity of concrete that can be carried in it?
It does absolutely. It is slightly heavier, and because of the amount of battery that we need to kind of get that 300 kilometer range, them five batteries. You're talking about a normal concrete truck that would probably carry somewhere between, you know, 8 cubic meters and 9 cubic meters. Now we're carrying 6 cubic meters. But again, these trucks are not meant for every plant and for every location. They're really, you know, being focused on urban city centres where you're going to have short hops from plant to the construction site.
Of course, the weight of the truck is dictated anyway. The max weight is dictated by law and legislation. But I guess if you're reducing emissions and you have a zero emissions truck, as a group or as a company, putting two trucks to do say 12 meters rather than trying to get it all into one truck, that's probably more feasible and therefore doable from a sustainability angle.
Yeah, to put this in context, this is very much a pilot scheme at the moment. As I said, this hasn't been done before in Ireland or the UK, so we are in somewhat uncharted territory. But if you were to take the diesel combustion engine, you know, annually, if you had a standard diesel truck, not even a concrete truck where the bottle has to spin all the time, would probably use somewhere in the region of, you know, 220 to 240 tons of CO2 per year. That's what it'll emit. When we talk about these electric trucks, they're zero emissions, so no CO2. And when we talk about built-up areas and we talk about inner city kind of areas where we have cyclists, pedestrians, school kids, you know, a lot of office people, we're talking about emissions. We're not just talking about carbon. We're talking about air pollutants. We're talking about particulate matter. We're talking about nitrous oxide, sulfur dioxide. None of this is with an electric truck. So there's many advantages. Yes, we're carrying less, yes, concrete, but we're doing it in a way that we have no emissions. And also in our research and innovation teams, when we're talking about our concrete, we're doing everything we can to drastically reduce the carbon, embodied carbon of the concrete itself. So it's no one silver bullet. It's kind of a case that the goal will be achieved by the sum of the parts. So it's everything and anything that we're looking at. It's our fleet, it's our fuel, it's our services, it's our products. It's everything that will all add up to help us, you know, reduce our carbon emissions as a company.
It sounds like it's going well so far, and you might have kept the receipt, but there's no sense that you're going to try and give the trucks back at the minute. You approached one particular customer then, was it, to begin those initial trials and to at least have some control of that?
We did, yeah. So we reached out to a valued customer of ours, Walls Construction, and my counterpart there, the sustainability manager there, Louise Martin, they kindly offered to allow us to deliver our first loads of concrete to one of their inner city sites, where we could see the actual truck working, you know, in a real location and a real construction site. And they were very happy to come on board and to trial that with us. And it's kind of a symbiotic relationship in the sense that it helps us get a grasp of what we're doing with our trucks, but it also is helping Walls reduce their emissions from their scope three. So their scope three and supplier emissions will be our emissions. So it's us helping them and them helping us. So it was really good.
I have to say, on the surface at a high level, that sounds very impressive and very doable. And I have to say, I'd be somewhat converted. I would have been sceptical when I first heard about this. It might be a couple of years before we see them in the Midlands. It doesn't sound like it'll be as far away as we think. And actually, it'll probably be no surprise if some customers around these areas, because you have many locations across Laois, Offaly, Westmeath, actually start looking for their concrete to come on electric vehicles then.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And listen, as a company, we've always seen our kind of self at the forefront of innovation. When we talk about some of your listeners might know, have heard of the term of GGBS, or ground granulated blast furnace slag. It's a cement placement that's in every load of concrete that we talk about today. Kilsarn were the very first ones to put GGBS into concrete back as far back as 2001. So we're always see ourselves as at the forefront, and hopefully, you know, we're not afraid to take the leap with the electric mixers, and hopefully that the data that we get will basically, you know, will incentivize other companies and other people to come on board and to look at them too.
Lovely. And beautiful too, to hear all through your story how data and collecting that data, using that to make your decisions and to inform those key decisions you make, be it financial, be it for sustainability, whatever it might be. You can't beat data, and you can't beat good analysis of that. Ken Mulkearns, Group Head of Innovations and Sustainability at Kilsarn, thank you so much for that this evening. Very best luck with those trials. I think we're all going to be looking out in anticipation to see fully electric, ready-mixed trucks flying around the Midlands very, very shortly. Thanks, Ken.
Thanks so much, Ron. Have a good evening.
What a brilliant story of a company really being an industry first, doing industry first, taking a lead and beginning to show what can be done. Like I said, I would have been sceptical it was doable. This is a bit like a farmer kind of getting a fully electric tractor to plough a field. It sounds like, no, there's no way it can work. It'll never happen. The customers will never buy into it. But it certainly sounds like that's happening. And it's only on the road a couple of days or a week at most, and already gaining a lot of interest and a lot of traction. So definitely more to come on that. Time for a quick break. After that, there's another Just Transition public information even coming up towards the end of this month. If you're in the tourism or hospitality sector, keep listening.
Taking care of business. With thanks to the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.
Before I introduce my final guest of the evening, I just remind you that Leo Offaly would like to invite you to an upcoming business breakfast, Unlocking Success with Lean, Green and Digital Impact Strategies. It's happening on Thursday the 25th of April in the Bridge House Hotel, Tullamore, from 8 a.m. to 9:30 a.m. Further details of the event are available on the local enterprise office Offaly website. And on all their social channels. But staying in kind of County Offaly's Leash, Westmead and Longford and all around, the EU Just Transition Fund tourism activators are busy across the region. Now, the tourism activator for Offaly is Mary Hensey. She's been on the show about a month or two ago telling you when she took up the role. She's not here to announce tonight that she's running for the European elections. We leave that to the Longford representative who's taking a bit of a career break there. But Mary, lots of stuff happening. I know you're knee deep in expressions of interest at the minute. You're looking for more, and yourself and Regina Dunn, your counterpart in Leash, are organising another public information evening next week, I believe.
That's correct. Regina and I are organising a meeting in the Heritage Hotel in Killinard on April the 24th at 7 p.m. So we're inviting anybody from Leash, Offaly, from any county really, in anybody who's planning on opening a tourist activity or a visitor experience accommodation in the Just Transition Fund region. They're all invited to the information evening next week.
I know your counterpart in Longford described it as a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Midlands businesses. He's also been quite critical of the whole process overall in terms of how the money is coming in, but that's a whole other story. But these particular funds do present a major opportunity. You probably can't speak to the exact detail of the expressions of interest, but they're coming in.
They are coming in.
Are they surprising you? Are people being ambitious enough, do you think?
Honestly, I would like to see maybe a little bit more variety and a little bit of more ambition. Yes, I am getting lots of expression of interest covering a range of activities and accommodation. But I think we could really push ourselves a little bit more. And especially with the activities, really come up with some imaginative, unique experiences. And I would even say, look at other countries. I know we have to think about the weather here, but the activities, they just need to be up and running and open for 120 days a year. So that's not all year round. It's 120 days. But if you look at the likes of, say, the Netherlands, Belgium, you know, other countries where they have lots of greenways and canals, you know, they're just way ahead of us. But it might offer a little bit of inspiration for applicants to do some research and look at what's out there.
Yeah, so maybe come out of that don't just think of additional accommodation or a small boutique hotel. Yeah. Think of maybe something that has a certain team and do that research. I mean, I remember it came out there recently that I think TikTok is now the largest search engine used by most people because they're just searching on those platforms for what's happening out there. So really, no idea too big, no idea too small.
Exactly. You know, just try, you know, instead of thinking of the glamping tent, try and push a little bit more and go a little bit more and create something really unique, because it's all about creating these, as I said, visitor experiences and attractions to bring people into the Midlands and make the Midlands a really sought after tourist destination and to keep them in the Midlands. That's a really important thing as well, is that we need to keep them for, you know, long periods. So that's, again, when Fáilte Ireland are looking at the applicants and the applications, they're looking at all of this criteria.
That that next meeting is taking place on the 24th of April in the Kilnard, the Heritage Hotel in Kilnard. Do people need to register for it?
You can turn up on the night. If you want to register, you can email myself or Regina, both of us. I'm mhensey@offleycoco.ie, but you can just turn up on the night. Can I also just say as well, get another meeting in too, that my counterparts in Roscommon and in Westmead, Gillian and Amy, they're also holding a public information meeting on the 24th too. But this one is in Athlone Springs Hotel in Monksland. And I'm just, again, just want to emphasise that our stress that the expression of interest deadline is noon on the 30th of June. So it is fast approaching. And the sooner you get your expression of interest in, the sooner it will be processed.
Well, there you go. You heard it straight from Mary Hensey there. EU Just Transition Tourism Activator with County Offaly. So lots of information even coming up. The information is out there. Deadline's coming fast. Get working on those expressions of interest. Mary, thank you so much for that this evening. And that's it for me. Just to say a quick thank you to all this evening's guests too, to Liz Marie and to Geraldine Emerson from the Midlands Fertility Clinic. Kellen Mulcairlins from Kilsaran. They're talking about their new electric concrete trucks that are on the road. And earlier on, Marie Walsh talking about the postponement of the patent referendum. That's it for me. I'll talk to you all next week.
Taking Care of Business returns next Tuesday at 7 p.m. with the local enterprise offices of Leash, Offaly and Westmeath. Find us on localenterprise.ie and let's talk business.